Climate change the facts. Forecasting rain by John Abbott and Jennifer Marahasi. John Abbott is a senior research fellow at Central Queensland University. Jennifer Marahasi is an adjunct research fellow in the Center for Plant and Water Science at Central Queensland University, foundation member of the Australian Environment Foundation, former senior fellow at the Institute of Public Affairs, 2004 to 2009, and author of Myth and the Murray, Measuring the Real State of the River Environment.
A reasonable test of the value of any scientific theory is its utility. For example, the calendars that were developed based on Nicholas Copernicus's heliocentric theory of the universe were better calendars than those based on Ptolemy's handy tables. The new calendars, based on the new theoretical approach that suggested the Earth moved around the Sun, rather than the Sun around the Earth, more precisely predicted the position of the Sun and the planets, and thus was of more utility for navigation and also weather forecasting. The adoption of the new theory, however, was resisted because of its political and religious implications. In contrast, the theory of anthropogenic global warming, AGW, has very little practical utility, but tremendous political value. It is a theory that accords with the mood of our time, the zeitgeist, which assumes that man's greed is despoiling the Earth, and that political action based on a scientific consensus can save the planet. This is part of the reason why credible scientific rebuttals fail to achieve its overthrow. The other reason is that the history of science shows it is competition, not logical argument, that only ever successfully displaces even a failed paradigm. For example, in a review of 7 high-profile scientific articles, and also devastating rebuttals, some of which were also published in the journal Science and Nature, Jeanette Bonobi and colleagues showed that original articles were cited 17 times more than their rebuttals, and that annual citations of the original articles were unaffected by the rebuttals. Indeed, it is a naive view of science that assumes new hypotheses are either accepted or rejected according to the received evidence. As Thomas Kuhn explains in his 1962 seminal work, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, it is more usual that an established paradigm will be continually modified in small ways to incorporate contrary evidence, that is, until a new theory emerges with the potential to capture the imagination of the discipline, or at least in the first instance, a critical 10%. The status quo. Prior to the establishment of the current Australian Bureau of Meteorology in 1909, Australian meteorologists had a keen knowledge of astronomy and considered solar, lunar, and planetary cycles in their weather forecasting. There remained some interest in this approach, which was termed solar terrestrial physics, at the Bureau until the early 1950s. Since the 1950s, the Bureau and other major climate research institutions around the world have worked toward a global effort to simulate climate largely independently of extraterrestrial influences. The primary focus has instead been modeling oceanic and atmospheric processes on Earth as an array of thousands of numbers while averaging spatiotemporal variations from outer space, even variations in solar radiation. By the mid-1970s, computing power was catching up with the ambition of these scientists to simulate Earth's climate, and by the 1980s, there was a growing confidence in the models, and, in particular, their ability to forecast the impact of increasing levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide, CO2, on climate. The focus now is on the interpretation of output from general circulation models, GCMs. This is what concerns mainstream meteorologists, with key drivers of climate change thought to relate to human activity. Indeed, the idea that the moon influences the weather through its gravitational effect is generally scoffed at. While meteorology has moved away from a deep knowledge of astronomy, there is no evidence to suggest that the skill of the discipline at weather and climate forecasting, particularly at medium and long-range rainfall forecasting, has improved. There is considerable evidence to suggest it is in decline, despite ever-increasing investments in supercomputers and media releases, not to mention high-profile collaborations through the United Nations. Professor Chris Turney is a modern climate scientist who set off on an expedition to the Antarctic in 2013, believing the GCMs that have been forecasting melting polar ice for some time. Turney subsequently attracted worldwide attention when, on Christmas Eve, the Russian-flagged ship he hired got stuck in sea ice. If, before setting out, he had consulted the long-range weather forecasters who operate independently of the established institutions, and without the aid of GCMs, but with reference to patterns and phase changes associated with solar and lunar phenomena, he could have been forewarned of the unusually slow melt rate of Antarctic ice last austral summer. For example, Kevin Long is a long-range weather forecaster based in Bendigo, Victoria. When he issued his seasonal forecast at the end of August 2013, it stated that the higher sea ice averages will become one of the dominant drivers of eastern Australia's developing mega-drought cycles, as higher sea ice periods go hand-in-hand with below-average rainfall and heavier late-season frost. But who listens to Long and other long-range weather forecasters, including Ken Ring in New Zealand and Joseph DeLeo in the United States, who operate independently of the established institutions? While Australian taxpayers invested upward of $30 million in just one supercomputer in March 2009, on the basis that this would make weather predictions more accurate, Long, without any government support, is arguably producing more reliable medium-term rainfall forecasts. For example, on 28 August 2013, the Bureau issued its national rainfall outlook for the austral spring of 2013, indicating that it would be wetter than average for most of the Murray-Darling Basin, and especially central Victoria. Managers of major water infrastructure prepared for possible flooding. Long also issued a forecast on 28 August 2013, but his had a dramatically different outlook. Long forecasted below-average rainfall for central Victoria, above-average temperatures, and with comments that river stream flows would drop away quickly. Long's forecast was remarkably accurate. On 25 September, the Bureau was forced to issue a revised spring forecast, this time forecasting below-average rainfall for the Murray-Darling Basin. The Bureau's forecasts are derived from the Predictive Ocean Atmospheric Model for Australia, POAMA. The output from POAMA is generally consistent with what is known of rainfall forecasts from other GCMs. They fail to reproduce the observed historical annual and seasonal mean rainfalls across Southeast Australia. In fact, they are often worse than the forecast a schoolchild could generate based on simply calculating the monthly mean rainfall for a particular locality with a pencil and pad. Such an average value is known as climatology. But the scientists at the Bureau are so committed to GCMs that in May 2013, they discarded the old statistical models relied on for the past 20 years and adopted POAMA as the basis for all climate forecasting. There is no peer-reviewed paper that indicates POAMA can reliably produce a seasonal or monthly forecast with more skill than the old statistical method, because it can't. Indeed, the peer-reviewed literature, including a new paper by us, shows that statistical models that rely on pattern analysis will consistently outperform GCMs such as POAMA. Meanwhile, many climate scientists seek to minimize the potential error of their GCM's forecast by promoting average values from multiple models. These are often referred to as ensembles. The Fifth Assessment Report, AR5, of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, in its conclusions on impacts, adaption, and vulnerability, released in March 2014, included rainfall forecasts for almost every region of the world. The forecasts were developed by averaging output from more than 50 different GCMs. It's a mammoth undertaking, and so it's done in stages with results published in the peer-reviewed literature. If we consider results just for the Murray-Darling Basin in terms of output from 27 different models, run by key institutions across the globe, including the Bureau, each contributing to the fifth phase of the Climate Model Intercomparison Project, it is evident that some models predict a large increase in rainfall, while others predict a large overall decline in rainfall for the Murray-Darling. The extent of the divergence in output from the individual GCMs should be reason for great concern and for the discarding of the models altogether. But instead, the scientists choose to combine the irreconcilable and thus arrive at a single figure claiming a 2% decline in rainfall for the Murray-Darling by 2090. Some claim Ken Ring is running a weather prediction scam because he uses the moon to inform his rainfall forecasts. Yet it is not disputed by those with an understanding of conventional physics that the moon's gravitational field, along with the day and night cycle generated by the spinning Earth, creates atmospheric tides that modulate high-altitude winds that have a major influence on weather. We have seen no independent assessment of the skill of Ring's predictions, but he sells many hundreds of his weather almanacs to Australian farmers each year. Indeed, if there is a scam, it is being run by the Bureau, not Ring, and at the expense of Australian taxpayers, with the approval of both the Australian government and the United Nations, and the adulation of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Interestingly, POAMA also receives significant direct industry funding, including from the Grains Research and Development Corporation and Queensland Cane Growers Limited. Meanwhile, members of these organizations buy Ring's almanacs. A test for the existence of natural climate cycles. In his book, Climate, the Counter-Consensus, Professor Robert M. Garter laments that the IPCC concentrates an analysis of climate change on only the last few hundred years and has repeatedly failed to give proper weight to the geological context of the relatively short 150-year-long instrumental record. Garter correctly draws attention to the natural cycles that span tens of thousands of years, including changes affected by Earth's tilt, 41,000-year, eccentricity, 100,000, and precession, 20,000. Carter goes on to mention other cycles of shorter duration, including those affected by variations in the intensity of the sun's magnetic fields, in particular the Schwab, 11-year, Hale, 22-year, and Gliesberg, 70-to-90-year, periodicities, and the effect of the moon and the sun through the 18.6-year-long lunar nodal cycles, which he states causes variations in atmospheric pressure, temperature, rainfall, sea level, and ocean temperature, especially at high latitudes. Long-range U.S. weather forecaster Joseph DeLeo uses changes in Pacific Ocean temperatures associated with the El Niño Southern Oscillation, ENSO, and also the Multi-Decadal Pacific Decadal Oscillation, PDO. He says ENSO is modulated by the PDO, affecting spring floods and tornadoes in the U.S. Ring explains the southern oscillation in terms of water sloshing from one side of the Pacific Ocean to the other and back again, depending on changing lunar declination. While essentially ignoring the likely extraterrestrial origin of the phenomena, the mainstream climate science community does take a keen interest in sea surface temperature anomalies, particularly in the Pacific, and in particular ENSO. Recognizing the global impact of this southern oscillation, but the moon as a driver, the government-funded scientists have been attempting to simulate ENSO using GCMs. Despite a concerted effort and thousands of peer-reviewed publications on the subject, the skill of the GCMs at forecasting ENSO remains poor, comparable to what could be achieved using the simple statistical models popular 30 years ago. Arguably, the best forecasts of ENSO come not from GCMs or simple statistical models, but from artificial neural networks, ANNs. ANNs are massive parallel distributed information processing systems with characteristics resembling the biological neural networks of the human brain. They are a form of artificial intelligence and represent state-of-the-art statistical modeling. In contrast to GCMs that attempt to simulate and understand climate from first principles, ANNs simply mine historical data for patterns. Many leaders within the mainstream climate science community are dismissive of ANNs and their application, claiming that because the climate is on a new trajectory, statistical models, including ANNs, are no longer applicable. But if through mining historical records, ANNs can produce better ENSO and also rainfall forecast, this in itself is evidence that natural climate cycles are still operating and that the climate is not on a radically new trajectory. Output from ANNs and GCMs can be easily and objectively measured using root mean square error, RMSE. This number simply adds together the difference between observed and forecast sea surface temperatures or rainfalls, with the bigger the number, the worse the forecast. So it's easy to show in an objective way that ANNs can provide a much better medium-term ENSO and rainfall forecast. The difficulty has been in generating interest in this approach and interest in the potential of ANNs to revolutionize climate science. The future. During the 1970s and 1980s, Western democracies moved away from their traditional methods of funding science. In Australia, there was a move to project-based funding of a limited duration, so scientists had to identify problems and promote these problems if they were to secure funding, if they were to keep their jobs. At the same time, there was increasing interest and reliance on environmental and climate science on mathematical models, facilitating a new preference for virtual over observational data. In his book, Science and Public Policy, Professor Ainsley Kello of the University of Tasmania explains how this has also contributed to the hijacking of science by people grinding axes on behalf of noble causes. Richard Lindzen, professor of atmospheric sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has repeatedly explained that climate science has now become a source of authority rather than a mode of inquiry, that it has a global constituency and has successfully co-opted almost all of institutional science. Our work, showing the potential application of artificial intelligence to medium-term rainfall forecasting, recently generating 5 scientific publications, has been possible as a consequence of philanthropic funding from the Beam McPhee Family Foundation. The foundation was established to provide scholars with an opportunity to seek out empirical evidence without ideological or commercial interference. Such criteria are often critical to the realization of scientific research where the benefits of a line of inquiry are not always immediately obvious and are often unpredictable. This investment needs to be leveraged into something more significant if the big questions about natural climate cycles are to be explored, if our initial investigations are to contribute to the development of a new paradigm. Confirmation bias is a tendency for people to treat data selectively and favor information that confirms their beliefs. This can lead to illusions of invulnerability and belief in the inherent morality of the group, leading to self-censorship, illusions of unanimity, and an incomplete consideration of alternative solutions to the issue at hand. All of these characteristics can be applied to both the mainstream climate science community and also global warming skeptics. Indeed, both groups are convinced of the inherent moral good in their cause and approach to the issue of global warming, but the community at large might be seen as losing interest in the posturing from both camps. Of perhaps more interest than the magnitude of recent increases in temperatures or not, might be a good medium-term weather forecast. There are natural climate cycles as described by Carter in his book, Climate, the Counter-Consensus. The cycles have an extraterrestrial origin and provide a physical basis for the long-range weather forecast sold by Ring and DeLeo. There's a potential role for ANNs in elucidating these relationships and describing them mathematically. Indeed, artificial intelligence has the capacity to underpin a new theory of climate in the same way that GCMs currently underpin AGW. ANNs, if run on supercomputers, could revolutionize our capacity to unravel and understand natural climate cycles. Obviously, this has direct application for better weather and climate forecasting with immense utility for humanity. The reality is that those who would like to see AGW theory discarded should increase their expectations of climate science rather than, as many do, support the myth that weather and climate are essentially chaotic and therefore unpredictable. The real long-term solution is philanthropic funding of alternative research programs, funding that backs diversity and competition. The Enlightenment happened because brave men went in search of knowledge. They sought to understand the natural world, not to save it. What climate science needs right now are new tools to replace the failed GCMs and a new unifying theory of climate to replace the failed theory of anthropogenic global warming.
Climate Change the Facts is published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved.